This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. We all carry around different stressors in our lives, and when we get sober, they can almost feel magnified at first because we're adjusting to feeling all our feelings again rather than using alcohol to numb them. I was honestly really surprised when I got sober at how many emotions came up for me. I remember literally saying, I have so many feelings right now, and it felt really overwhelming having to feel them all. But the great thing about that is that it gave me the clarity and awareness that I had some things to work through, like people pleasing and like my own self-talk. That's where therapy can be so helpful, because it's a safe space to get things off your chest and begin to work through what's been weighing you down. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. What I really love about BetterHelp is that it's entirely online. All you have to do is fill out a questionnaire and you'll be matched with a licensed therapist, and you can switch therapists anytime with no additional charge. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/happiest today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/happiest. You guys know I'm all about making our lives as easy as possible in sobriety. Well, you can eat stress-free this spring with Factor Meals, and they're offering my listeners 50% off your first month plus 20% off your next month with code HAPPIEST50. Every fresh, never frozen meal is chef-crafted and dietitian approved. You can choose from a weekly menu of 35 options plus more than 60 different add-ons. What I love so much about Factor is that I've never been someone who makes time for cooking, but with Factor, I have delicious meals ready to go and on the table in just 2 minutes, so I can get back to doing what I want with my time without the hassle of any prep, cooking, or cleanup, a total godsend. Factor's also celebrating Earth Day all month long, so look out for the Earth Month Eats badge on the menu for their lowest carbon footprint meals. Head to factormeals.com/happiest50 and use code happiest50 to get 50% off your first month plus 20% off your next month. That's code happiest50 at factormeals.com/happiest50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active. Hello, everyone. I hope that you're having an awesome week so far. I am coming at you this week with an awesome guest. Today, I'm chatting with Casey Davidson. Casey is an alcohol-free coach, and she's the host of the Hello Someday podcast. I absolutely loved this conversation. We get to hear all about Casey's story today, and her story really speaks to kind of like the progressive nature of alcohol. You'll hear her talk about, you know, the start of her drinking and the fact that it kind of started off just like fun and kind of funny until it wasn't anymore. And, you know, by the time Casey quit drinking, she had a very successful career. She was married, she had kids, but she really realized that alcohol and her drinking wasn't serving her anymore. And you'll hear her kind of talk about the impact it was having on her mental health and on how she felt about her life and how her sobriety really transformed that. So this was such an awesome conversation. You're sure to take so much away from it. And with that being said, I won't make you wait any longer to hear it. So here is my chat with Casey. Hi, Casey. How are you?
Good. I'm so excited to be here.
Oh, I'm so happy to have you here. I came on your podcast, a couple weeks ago now, and that was such a fun one. I loved that conversation. So I've been excited for this one.
Yeah, we were just talking about all the things we're happier about since we got sober, all the good things in life, which was cool.
It was so fun. Yeah, if anyone listening, if you haven't, go listen to that episode because it was literally just a back and forth. All the things happier about life now that we're sober. So much fun.
Yeah.
But oh my gosh, okay. Well, to just hop right into it right off the bat, what is your sober date? How long have you been sober?
Oh my gosh. So I just hit 8 years in February. So Amazing. My date is February 18th, 2016.
Okay. I love it. Congrats on 8 years. Oh my God. Getting close to 10.
It feels totally surreal because when I started, I could not get past day four, like for 2 years. So it's kind of crazy.
Wow. Yeah. Oh my God. That's so funny you say that because day four always was a really big one for me in my few attempts as well. And so you, correct me if I'm wrong, I think that you had said when we chatted last that you fell sort of on like the gray area, like you didn't necessarily hit a rock bottom. Is that right?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's so funny, whatever you think the gray area is. I definitely mm-hmm. do not identify as an alcoholic. I never use that term to describe myself or anyone else unless they personally self-identify as it. I never had any like big external consequences and no one really told me to stop drinking. Like my husband never said, I'm worried about your alcohol. I think you need to stop drinking. But I was always like a big red wine girl. I literally described myself as that, you know, in the same way I'd be like, I work in marketing. I work at this company. I have two kids. I'm a big red wine girl. I'm from Seattle. Like it was in the top bullets of who I was. And, you know, when you talk about gray area drinking, I kind of, unless I was trying to moderate or cut back or take a break, I would generally drink a bottle of wine a night, sometimes more, 7 nights a week. Like I was a Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. And what cracks me up is it didn't seem that unusual, you know?
Right. Interesting. Oh my God, I totally resonate with like it being such a big part of your identity. I was a white wine drinker, but otherwise the same as you with like it just being feeling like such a big part of who I was. But how would you describe like from when you first started drinking till like the end when you were like a like nightly bottle of wine, how did that progression happen for you? Do you feel like looking back now, drinking was sort of problematic for you from the get-go, or did it sort of like progressively happen?
Oh yeah. I mean, it was problematic from the get-go. I, like I said, I was always kind of a big drinker. I didn't drink at all in high school, except for like 2 weekends away. But that was because I went to a boarding school. And in Connecticut, my parents were diplomats overseas. So they lived in Africa and Brazil. When I was in high school, the government was paying for my school. And literally, if you got caught drinking, you got suspended. Second time, you got kicked out. So I had nowhere to go if I got suspended. Like I'd be at my grandparents in Ohio. So I was like the best good girl you've ever seen, right? I broke zero rules. And yet, the first time I got drunk, I actually went to a girlfriend's house. We were away for a weekend. It was right before my sister graduated from high school. She went to a different boarding school. And my dad was picking me up the next morning, and I hadn't seen him in 5 months. So we got super drunk. We were playing like Drink While You Think with Bacardi rum. And I was chugging it because I wanted to get drunk, right? Anyway, threw up all over myself, spent like 5 hours trying to crawl up a grassy hill. Don't remember any of it. And my dad picked me up the next day and I was so hungover. I don't know how my girlfriends got me in the shower. And he wanted me to drive. He knew I was hungover. He thought it was hysterical because I just gotten my license. I said, no, I had it pull over on the side of the highway so I could like throw up, telling him I needed to go to the bathroom. And then I literally, with my grandparents there, imagine the commencement of this boarding school, walking down this grassy aisle with everybody's parents and grandparents there. Like James Taylor, the singer, his daughter went to this boarding school. He was in the crowd.
Oh my God.
And I got up, I ran in front of the entire procession to the side of the building and puked on the side of the building. I didn't even get behind it. Like it was so bad. So you know, from the beginning, it was problematic.
That's like the best first drinking story I've ever heard.
Yeah, we're very proud. And the only thing, my dad thought it was hysterical. But I only saw my parents 3 times a year. And my mother just turned to me and was like, you could have picked a more appropriate time. Like she, you know, you name it. She was just like, and my grandmother handed me a mint. I was just like, dear God, make this end. Make this day end. But I went to college and, you know, it was the first time I could drink. And I was always like, you know, gold star type A, good girl. Very worried about what other people would think of me, really tried to make a lot of friends. And I joined the women's rugby team. I always played sports in high school. But in college, you could play this team sport and party. And there was like the boys team, the girls and the boys rugby teams partied together. And it was like literally a master's degree in problematic binge drinking. It was like it was like a graduate school on how to drink in a really bad way. And so I loved it. And I was on the team for 4 years. I was the captain my senior year, you know, arranging all the keg runs and the keg stands and all that shit. And then, graduated college and went on to work. And I just sort of shifted what I drank based on where I was in life, right? So in my early 20s, it was cocktails out at bars. And then when I lived with my boyfriend, we would, you know, all go, all these couples, and go camping. And then we had got married and had dinner parties with all the wine bottles. So I hung out with big drinkers. I was always a big drinker. I was always kind of a 7-night-a-week drinker. I don't know if it was always a problem, but it was pretty close. You know what I mean?
Yeah. That's so interesting how you said that you like adjusted what you drank to where you were in life, because I think same, like when I was in university, I would drink like the coolers, like the vodka coolers and like vodka mixed drinks. And then when I like moved out and was like a working adult, it felt like it was no, I think if I had gotten home from work in the evening and drank like a vodka cooler, I would have been like red flag, but getting home from work and pouring a glass of wine just felt like adult and sophisticated. And like it made it feel normal.
And we are so taught that, right? I mean, there are entire Cosmo articles about what you can tell about a woman based on the drink she has in her hand, right? If you drink a Cosmo, you're X. If you drink, you know, a rum and Coke, you're Y. If you drink a keg, XYZ. And so we're taught that it's a, you know, it's just part of your personality. It's part of your age in life. When I was in college, I was a keg girl. Like we hung out with the red Solo cups around the keg. But then, you know, cocktails out. And, you know, I even remember I always was sort of this like hyper vigilant girl. I felt like I needed to be on top of everything. I couldn't stop my mind from like, you know, all the checklists of things I needed to do. And so I would drink the night before business trips when I was in my 20s, and big business trips. I was a consultant. So we're flying up to American Express in New York City to do a big presentation. And I would like get drunk by myself in my living room the night before and throw up. I mean, this is terrible. God knows how I ever got promoted. And then I'd go to these meetings and be so hungover that like I couldn't be nervous about it because I was trying not to puke. So this in my theory was like weirdly working for me. Like there were no red flags. Like this right. was a problem in my mind.
Interesting. Okay. And something I was so curious about when you were telling that story of like your graduation is like, what was the inner experience for you of like the morning after? Because you tell it like your family kind of laughed it off, it sounds like, when that happened. And I don't know, I'm curious if you have a similar experience, but I was never able to like laugh off my drunk stories like that. Like even if the people around me got a kick out of it, I would like laugh, but inside I would be like mortified, feeling so much shame, so much anxiety, even if no one else thought I really did anything wrong. So like, what was your experience of like the aftermath of that?
Well, you know, what's funny. I was sort of a blackout, gray out drinker, right? So I didn't remember a lot of stuff. So I was pretty good at actually thinking it was funny in real time, which is pathetic because I was like so sick. But in my mind, like, when I drank, anything could happen. And that was actually a feature. That wasn't a bug in my mind. I was like, oh, that's the good stuff, because I, you know, was kind of self-conscious. And I was like, if I get drunk enough, who knows what could happen? What adventure could exist or whatever? So, I mean, no, it's hard. You know, I think that's one of the things. Thank God I went to college before videos and social media. But I hung out with all these huge drinkers, and to the point where like on the women's rugby team, there was a thing called boot and rally. And literally the goal was if you threw up, you needed to chug a beer as quickly as possible afterwards. Like we used to do, like there were all these songs. If you scored a goal or a try in rugby, you had to drink out of an old cleat. Like it was a thing. So if you combine that celebration of whatever happened with blackouts, you never, other than feeling ill, everybody's like, oh my God, that was epic. And you're like, dude, it was epic. I don't remember shit, you know? So there's no video. Everyone around me is telling me it was awesome. So I'm just going to go with that.
Wow. Just so, so normalized.
So normalized. Yeah. And the only time, you know, once I graduated college, you know, I would spend in my early 20s. This was before I learned not to talk about drinking or being hungover. You know, you learn that later when suddenly people are like, you did what? So I threw up for hours in my little basement apartment, like throwing a bile. And I somehow told my mom this. And she was like, honey, I think you need to reevaluate your relationship with alcohol. Mm. And that, you know, became a running joke in my family. Like it was the punchline to everything for years, for like 20 years, because I stopped drinking when I was 40. And what's funny is I am the only one in my family who drinks problematically. Like my parents, really? My sister, no one else, just me.
Wow. That's so opposite in my family. It's all over really? My family. Yeah. Wow. So when, okay. So you were able to really like laugh it off and kind of like convince yourself it was okay. So at what point did you start to say like, uh-oh, I think I need to look at this? Like, what was that journey like?
Well, you know, what's funny. I literally did not know a single other person who was sober until I quit drinking. So Wow. There, not everyone drank like I did. Like there's no question. I was like the girl with no off switch. But I hung out with a lot of other people without an off switch. And also, my husband is a normal drinker, but we drank a lot together. And so he always took care of me. Do you know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. we've been together since we were 23. He always drove home. He always was sort of in charge. I was often dead weight at the end of the night. But, you know, me and my girlfriends would say to our two husbands, we'd be like, love me, don't judge me. Like, you knew what you were getting into. And he was sort of like, yeah, but I kind of thought you'd grow out of it at some point. You know, when you're 38 and you have two little kids and you're throwing up in a hotel bathroom, like somehow not as cute as when you were 24. But when I started to worry about it, for a long time, I was oblivious, which sounds dumb, but I did not know that waking up at 3 a.m. was related to alcohol withdrawal. Like, just had no idea. Mm-hmm. I thought my anxiety was legitimately real, and waking up at 3 a.m. was because I was so stressed out, and my job stressed me out, and XYZ, and you know, I used to wake up at 3 a.m. and the first thought going through my head was, I want to shoot myself. And so I would go to a therapist and tell her, I've got insomnia, I've got anxiety, XYZ's off the chart. Truly not connecting it to my drinking, but never telling her how much I drank because, God, you don't want them judging you, right? So I'd just be like, yeah, a couple drinks, a couple times a week, let's move on. And it wasn't until, so I'd go to therapists on and off. I mean, when shit was happening, right? Like my dad died, my grandfather died, I had a huge work project. So I wasn't connecting all the dots at that point. And then I started trying to moderate. And I started making all the rules, mostly at the time because of like weight loss. You know, I was like, it's not that drinking five drinks a night is an issue. It's just I need to cut back. And of course, I couldn't, or I didn't. Like I'd white knuckle it a couple days. I mean, I tried everything. Like, let me switch to white wine because I don't like it as much. Let me only drink when I'm in the house so I won't drive. And then I was like, okay, let me only drink when I'm out of the house so I don't drink a bottle, you know, because then I have to drive mm-hmm. home like this. Your mind, like I'd sign up for nighttime running clubs. I'd sign up for 5:30 a.m. workouts, like all the things. I did the, you know, I'm totally anti-diet culture now, but back in the day when I did Weight Watchers, I would be like salmon and asparagus, egg white omelet, salad, 6 glasses of wine. Why am I not losing weight? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'd be like, I'm in my effing points. No. And then when my son was about 6 months old, I read the book Drinking a Love Story. Have you ever read that?
I haven't. It's on my list, but I haven't read that one yet.
It was my first. It was so good. And I read it and immediately the way, even in her intro where she's describing this love affair with alcohol, I was like, oh shit. Because it was so close to home. Like she was like saying everything I felt. And obviously, as you go through the book, she you know, goes to AA, identifies as an alcoholic, all those kinds of things, and does get sober. But it is a really compelling memoir. And so I wrote myself a note. My son was like 6 months old and was like, oh shit, I have a problem. Like, this is not good. I need to figure this out. And then like 3 days later, I came back to the same Word document and was like, just kidding, nothing to see here. I was overreacting. Like, the denial was so, I'm like writing myself notes and ignore myself from Tuesday. It's all good. The first time I tried to quit, my son was five. I mean, the first time I truly tried to quit, I actually saw a therapist about anxiety and addiction and went in there and was like, yeah, my boss, my husband, my son, my life, and I drink a bottle of wine a night. And he was like, oh, let's talk about your drinking. I was like, no, let's talk about my boss. You know. And anyway, he encouraged me to go to AA. I was like, damn it, he's not getting it. And so I went to AA for 4 months. I joined a group online. This was, God, 11 years ago. So there weren't a lot of other paradigms for quitting drinking or approaches. I did AA for about 4 months. The people were so nice, but it wasn't my path. It wasn't my jam. But of course, I'm sure some of that was me just not being ready. And some of that was, you know, I got pregnant when I was 4 months sober and sort of did the slow shuffle away from all the declarations that drinking was an issue for me. And by the time I had my daughter, I was like, I'm fixed. Like, my job's better. My life's better. My marriage is better. I'm happier. I'm less stressed. Not connecting any of that with the fact that I hadn't drank in a year. Like, no. Right. I was like, so my drinking was situational, meaning I'm better now so I can drink again. Mm-hmm. And so I decided like, oh, I'm just going to moderate. You know, you tell yourself just a glass of wine on a date night every once in a while. Pretty quick, it got back to, you know, two glasses on a date night. And then, well, a bottle on a Friday night with my husband. And then, well, a bottle every night with my husband. And then a bottle by myself every night. It took me 2 years to stop again. The whole time they always say like recovery ruins you for drinking. The entire time I knew it was the alcohol. Like I was no longer oblivious. Every time I woke up with a hangover, every 3 a.m. wake up, every time I felt like I couldn't cope, every time I couldn't remember stuff, like I was like, this is the alcohol. So I knew I was going to have to stop. It was just a question of, I didn't want to stop yet. Until it got to the point where I was like, I can't feel this way anymore, you know?
Yeah. Uh-huh. Oh my God. I remember being in that phase of like, when you know it, like you're not in denial anymore, but you're still not ready to change and you're still doing the same thing. Like it's such a tough spot to be. And I was the same where I just got to a point of like, I can't feel this way anymore. Did anything? Yeah. Happened that day, like your final straw of like, I'm done. What happened there?
Yeah. Everything was just this death of a thousand cuts. So for a long time during those 2 years, I was reading everything in the online groups. I was listening to podcasts. I knew I was no longer in denial. It was just the thought in my mind is the way I'm drinking is unsustainable, but I just don't want to stop yet. Like I could probably play this out for a couple more years. And there was just enough small things building up. Like I had gone to a business conference in Arizona at one of those really high-end resorts by myself. And I had a 2-year-old at home. I was so excited to like sleep through the night and be in the sophisticated place and be in the sunshine. And the first night I went down there, I went to this mixer and I didn't know anyone and it was awkward and I love to drink, right? So I just started drinking and, you know, God knows how I got back to my hotel room, but I woke up the next morning for this all day, like 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. every 10-minute meeting sessions, so brutally hungover. And just my eyes were bloodshot. I felt like garbage. And the first thing that they did in the like keynote session was, you know, they have these people who are supposed to be inspirational. It was like, find a stranger and stare into each other's eyes for 5 minutes, not looking away. And I desperately didn't want anyone to look at me that closely. Aww. Like, it was literally the worst and best possible thing. Like, my eyes were watery. I felt like they were yellow. They were bloodshot. And then that night I went to dinner and a woman was so drunk next to me that I talked to the night before, like falling asleep at the table. And there were all these guys there, you know, and it was just, it was so clearly unsafe. And I knew that that could be me, that that could be me in 3 years, in 5 years, in a month. And so I took her back to her hotel room. But it was like another red flag. And then, you know, I was at a nice resort with my husband and my kids. And, anyway, my kids were a disaster. Like, my daughter threw her plate and smashed it at a nice dinner because she was two and started screaming. And the hotel brought me a bottle of wine, to like somehow make up for us trashing their dining room. They were very kind. They were like, seems like you've had a hard day. And of course I drank it and I woke up and was throwing up in the bathroom on my knees at the age of 39, 40, running the water so that my husband and two little kids hopefully wouldn't hear me in the next room. And I was just like, what the hell am I doing? And then I came home. And so, you know, the final straw is so innocuous. I was watching a TV show on a Tuesday or Wednesday. My husband said to me, you watched this last night? I was like, no, you didn't. No, I didn't. You don't know, right? He's in and out. He does other things. And I just knew he was wrong. And then I got to the very end of the hour-long episode. I think it was Scandal. And suddenly something was like, it was very familiar. And I was like, oh my God, I watched this entire program last night and my brain did not record any of it. And that night I went to bed, woke up at 3 a.m. as usual, was reading in these online sober Facebook groups, and someone else who was much braver than I was posted again about another day one. In the comments, someone suggested a sober coach. And I was just like, I can't do this anymore. And so I went into the office, found the website, signed up at 10 a.m. and that was my last day one. But it feels like there were so many big things. And yet from the outside, no one would have known, like, these 2 weeks of just too many red flags, too many reminders, too many crappy nights, too many, what the hell am I doing? You know?
Yes. Oh, I relate so much. My day one was after the most uneventful thing ever. Like, there was no reason for it to be my day one. Nothing. It's actually funny. There was a TV aspect to mine as well, but like, I just had, and it was 2020. So I did like a socially distant night with like one of my best friends in my backyard, drank way too much wine, woke up on the couch, didn't remember the end of the night, but she had texted me and said like, thanks so much for such a great night. Love you. Like, I had no reason to be anxious. And yet I felt so anxious, like as always. And it was just this moment of like, I can't feel this way anymore. But it was so funny. I had been watching the show New Girl for the first time. And like, I had passed out on the couch, I guess, watching it. And then I like went to pick it back up the next day. I was like a season ahead. And I was like, why is she saying the word husband? Like, they didn't get married yet. Like, what happened? And I watched way ahead because I didn't realize I had drunkenly like watched it and passed out watching it. So it's so funny that you said that. But yeah, I think, like you said, death by a thousand cuts, it's really just like, it seems like something small, but it's really just cumulative where we just get like, reach our enough is enough, I can't feel this way moment.
I'm sure I had death by a thousand cuts like the full 22 years I was drinking. Right. I mean, it's so funny because so many of us are like, oh my God, that night was really awkward not drinking, or I didn't have as much fun at this event, or this one person made this comment about me not drinking. When I think of the 22 years I gave drinking like second, third, thousandth chances, you know what I mean? Like, oh, I threw up in the office bathroom before a big meeting. Like, no, that's not enough to deter me. But like someone's brother at a cookout's like, dude, that's lame. And you're like, that's it. I got to go back to drinking. Sobriety sucks.
That's such a good point. We give drinking a million and one tries and like sobriety feels a little hard at first. And we're like, oh my God, it's not for me.
I was uncomfortable. I'm out.
Yeah. Oh my God. So true. That was me. Like I did when I really was hitting a bad point with my drinking, I did a dry January because I was like dipping my toe in. I wasn't ready to commit, but I knew my drinking was problematic. I did the 1 month and I came out of it. I was like, this just proves it. Like sobriety's not for me. I was miserable. I was bored. Like back to drinking I go. And then I got sober like 9 months later.
Yeah. I feel like I love dry January and sober October and anything that gives people the reason and the sort of like camaraderie and support to take any period of time away from alcohol. I mean, I prefer a much longer period of time, like 100 days, because I think in 30 days, right, the first 2 weeks suck because it's just hard. You're in withdrawal and your dopamine's all out of whack and you're craving. And then the second 2 weeks of not drinking, if you're just doing a month, you're basically you're counting down so that your reward for not drinking is drinking, right? So you never rewire that reward system. You're just white knuckling it. But even with that, you get to experience better sleep. You get to be more joyful. You get to like build that muscle of like, not having a drink in your hand every Friday night, you get to feel good in the mornings. Like all of that is information so that the next time you have a hangover or a blackout or are embarrassed, you're like, oh, I didn't feel this way when I wasn't drinking. You know what I mean?
Yes, 100%. And so speaking of like the first 30 days being hard, like what did early sobriety look like for you?
So I think it was scary, but really good because I hired a coach. And the reason I say that is I had tried so many times to just take a break. Like I would tell, you know, I got my sobriety date is February 18th. That is not because I didn't make the New Year's resolution that I was not going to drink for like the eighth year in a row. Right. I got 4 days, then drank, then 4 more days, then drank. And I would say, well, 2 bottles of wine a week is way better than 8, which is not incorrect. It is way better than 8. But I was still doing the absolute worst part over and over and over again. I was never getting out of that craving withdrawal cycle. So when I hired a coach, I emailed her every day and, you know, was like, okay, day one, okay, day two. You know, we also had phone calls every once in a while. But I am, you know, I think you have to know your personality. So I am a gold star girl. I like to be the teacher's pet. So like, I wanted to be like the gold star teacher's pet of my sober coach. And, you know, honestly, whatever works, that worked for me. So I wanted to drink on day one. I wanted to drink on day 4. But I was like, I cannot write my coach and tell her that I just said, screw it. You know, like I just didn't want to disappoint her.
The accountability piece. Yeah.
I needed someone external for sure. And that helped me a lot. There was also a huge focus on self-care and bubbling up and sober treats. So my coach was like, get yourself a sober treat every single day, plan them in advance so you don't feel deprived. So I was like, all right, you know, Friday, my sober treat is a pedicure and takeout sushi. Saturday, my sober treat is new running shoes and sitting in a coffee shop with a magazine. Sunday, you know, you name it, guard. So I had it all planned out. And then for me, I had to tell everyone because, like I said, I was a 7-day-a-week drinker. I was a red wine girl. There was nobody who was going to not notice that I was not drinking. Like it just didn't happen. And so I told my girlfriends, my husband, my morning workout group, my colleagues, like everyone, I was like, I'm doing a 100-day no alcohol challenge. And that, not that I hadn't said that before and walked it back, but saying it so loudly and then having the support of my coach, like, I feel like that was the combination I needed.
And how was it received by people? Because you've said that like you looked pretty okay from the outside. Did you get any pushback from people of like thinking that was extreme? Or maybe that came later when if you started with kind of the 100-day thing. But yeah. I'm curious because I think that's something people who don't hit a big dramatic rock bottom, and I experienced this, like can receive like some pushback of like, I think you're okay to keep drinking.
Well, I think I was lucky in that most people in my life were supportive of me, meaning like I still have the same friends that I had before. And that's because even though we were huge drinking buddies, we were also really good friends and supportive of each other as like human beings, you know? My husband didn't necessarily want me to stop drinking. Like he wanted me not to pass out on the couch on a weeknight, you know, but we had a lot of fun drinking together. He just wanted me to drink like a normal person, right? And I'm like, dude, I have been trying to do that. If you know, like, trust me, that has been the goal. But he was very supportive of like, okay, I'm doing a health challenge. And I had to ask him because, you know, he would bring me home wine when I had a bad day, or I'd tell him I was taking a break. And like 3 days later, I'd be like, can you pick me up a bottle of wine? Like, screw that. And so I had to tell him, I said, look, I'm really serious about this. I know I've tried before, but I need to have no wine in the house. Please do not pick me up any. And even if I ask you to, please don't. And, which is hard because he's like, I'm not your father. Like, I'm not your parent. But I was like, can you do this for me? And I didn't actually ever ask him to pick me up wine since that day. And it's because I think I had the coach. I was serious. I got some sober momentum. So it got better. In terms of people giving me shit at work, like everybody was like, oh, you're doing your no alcohol challenge. Okay. Let's figure out what wine bar we're going to go to when you hit 100 days. Mm. And I was just like, sure. You know, like I just kept being like, we'll talk about that then. And when I hit 100 days, I said to everyone, you know what? I feel so good. I'm going to go for 6 months. And when I hit 6 months, I said, I'm going to go for a year. And after a year, I was like, yep, I'm done. But in those first like 3 months, I got so much happier and so much healthier. I mean, I ran a 10K for the first time in 6 years. Not everyone has this happen, but I dropped a lot of weight. I was happier. My husband said that our house was just so much more peaceful. Like, it used to be very, like, my moods were very up and down. And there was a lot of, like, internalized drama about work or frustrations with the kids and life. And he was like, it's just so much more peaceful. Like, you'll come home from work and I'll be like, how was your day? And you'll be like, fine. And he was like, fine? Because usually I'd be like, my boss, this person, whatever, I'm stressed, this, you know, computer project. And I'd be like, yeah,
pour me a glass of wine.
Had a couple meetings, got a cup of coffee, got a workout in the morning. And he was like, this is incredible, you know?
Wow. And so can I ask, though, I'm so interested, you know, your husband initially didn't want you to quit drinking because he wanted you to moderate, and drinking was something that you really did together. And I'm curious about that because when I got sober, I was single. But I know that's something that like people struggle with if they're in like a long-term relationship. It can really change like the dynamic of that relationship, if that's something that you did together. So how did that kind of go?
Yeah. I mean, I think it helped that I set a 100-day challenge at first, not only for me, but for him, because
to ease into it.
Spent, every anniversary on wine tasting weekends. We went to Italy and drank crafts of wine. Every date night was like basically a pub crawl. And we had a lot of fun together. Like, I was most stressed in early sobriety about what we would do on date nights. Like, I was like terrified to go on a date with him because I could not think of what we would do. And so it took effort to be like, okay, one night we went to the movies and then we went to a bookstore because we were going on a trip and looked at all the travel books. Or we went out to sushi because I was never a sake drinker and green tea goes really well with sushi. Like, it wasn't, you know, he like suggested an Italian restaurant and I'm like, have sushi, you know, being a red wine girl, I was like, I cannot go to Italian. Or he suggested going to a brewery. And I was like, hey, babe, I'm still doing my 100-day challenge. How about we go to this coffee shop with an open mic night, like live music? And so it was sort of negotiating around that. When I hit 100 days, he was really surprised I was going to keep going because we were going to Italy together with my family and Croatia. And I mean, never been to Italy, not drinking. He was like, okay, not drinking on vacation, not drinking on Italy, not drinking with your family around. Like, this is crazy. And I was going to, it was my birthday. And so I was like, nope, I'm going to keep going. And once I made it through that, I mean, I think it was 6 months before I told my husband that I had hired a sober coach, that I had joined like an online course sobriety group, or how worried I was about my drinking. Like 6 months, he had no idea. And so that was just kind of like, it helped me. I don't want to say he was so unobservant, but we had very busy lives. He had a full-time job. I had a full-time job. We had two kids. He was a baseball coach and a basketball coach. And I was like, how does he not know all this stuff? Like, it's so crazy to me. And then I was like, oh, that's how I got away with drinking so much without him noticing.
Right. And how did that trip to Italy go? I have to ask, like, at 100 days sober, it's your birthday, you're with family, you're in Italy. Yeah. Like, that's a lot combined. How did it feel for you?
I remember talking to my coach on day 16 and I was like, here's the thing. And so many of us do this, right? She's like, all right, what's coming up for you? What are you worried about? It's like, I'm going to Italy with my family. I have no idea how I'm going to go without drinking. She was like, all right, okay, when is that? And I was like, 4 months from now. She was like, how about we talk about that in 3.5 months?
Yeah.
you know, I knew, you know, by that point I'd been like 110 days sober by the time I left. And I had been really processing sort of like, how do I reward myself without drinking? How do I enjoy my life? What's better? I was really focused on observing everything that was improving in my life, like romanticizing sobriety, not alcohol.
Yes. Yes.
And so I put a screensaver on my phone when I went to Italy, like your lock wallpaper, and it said, you didn't come this far to only come this far. And I saw it like 5 times a day. I posted in all my groups. I was like, I'm going on this trip. I am not going to drink. So I did gelato crawls with my son instead of going to every wine bar in Italy. He thought I was like the coolest mom ever. He was 8. So we basically have pictures of me and him all over Venice eating gelato at like 17 different places.
I love that.
Yeah, I went to bed early so my husband didn't have to carry me through, you know, small streets as dead weight. Mm-hmm. And, you know, my husband went out drinking some nights with my sister's husband. And I was a little bit jealous, but I was just like, you know what? I'm safe. I'm home. I'm with my 8-year-old. And I got up at like 7 a.m. and I walked along these canals and did all this incredible photography before all the tourists came out. And it was just magical. And I just knew, if I drank on that trip, I would always look back on those pictures and I would regret it. And that would be the one thing I knew. You know how do you have the thing where you can look at every single picture and know whether you were drinking or not drinking in that moment?
Oh, yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right? I just was 100%. Like, I don't want to look back on this and be like, yeah, I was drunk that trip again. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah. Oh, I love that story. Like, no, when you said knowing, like, I'm safe, I'm back in my hotel, like that feeling of safety that comes from sobriety and knowing that, like, you can trust yourself is so good.
Yeah. And you don't realize, or I didn't, I mean, I was unsafe so many times. I was just very lucky.
Same.
You know, like I would go out at a conference and be in a bar with coworkers and wake up the next morning in my bed brutally hungover, and they would tell me how they got me into my room. I mean, God knows how I ever got promoted. I was like a director at a Fortune 500 company. I would not promote me. I don't know what the hell they were thinking.
No, it is scary to hear those things. I've always thought about, like, when I lived in Australia, I was a drunk mess for that whole year. And I remember a few times getting in an Uber alone, passing out, and waking up to the Uber driver being like, miss, like, you're home, like struggling to wake me up to tell me that I was home. And I'm like, if I had gotten in the wrong car, like, it's scary to look back on, right?
Yeah, it is. And my kids are getting older and I'm just like, please be smarter than I am.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Is it something you talk pretty openly with your kids about?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I actually had a podcast I recorded with my 9-year-old daughter about how we talk about alcohol. And it's basically her talking about everything she knows about alcohol. And it, I think it's an interesting conversation. So I quit drinking when she was 2. So she obviously doesn't remember me drinking at all. One of my big motivators when I actually stopped drinking that sort of kept me on the path was thinking about my son. He was 8 years old and wasn't quite at the point where he was like absorbing what was happening. I mean, I don't think he really, he knew I loved my red wine. He knew that was my favorite drink or whatever, but like, I don't think he was aware of stuff. On the other hand, apparently neither was my husband. So whatever. but I thought about, okay, a decade from now, he will be 18. And if I am passing out on the couch at 9 p.m. and not remembering shows when he's 8, my thought was, knowing how much worse it gets, when he is 18, is he going to want to bring his friends home to the house? And that just like hit me so hard, because I want more than anything to have this relationship with my kids where they come home from college or their early 20s and tell me all about their lives and sit around and talk for hours. And that was something that I was like, you know, my family wants no part of where the train I was on was headed. And he's turning 16 next month and we are very close and he's really proud of me. And my husband still drinks, so it's not like alcohol is terrible or bad, but they know that it's addictive and they know all the bad stuff about it. And, you know, people decide to do stuff all the time that isn't good for you. And I totally appreciate that. But my husband's not blacking out and passing out every night. Mm-hmm. You know, he's having a beer with dinner. So I'm like, yeah, dad drinks. But for me, I had no off switch. And here are all the reasons why, you know.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I love that. Having grown up with a sober mom, it always just makes me so happy to hear stories like that, because I'm always like, oh my God, best thing you can do for your kids, 100%.
Yeah.
I love it. Okay. So, oh my gosh. So at, you know, 8 years sober, this is such a big question, but can you just speak to like how life has changed for you because of your sobriety?
Yeah. I mean, it's changed a ton, and in another way, it hasn't changed very much, right? Mm-hmm. And so that's what's interesting. The thing I think has changed the most for me is my mental health, 100%. Yes. Because when I was drinking, I felt like I could barely cope with life. I felt trapped. I felt kind of doomed. I felt very, you know, I kept being like, what's wrong with me? And I didn't attribute all of that to the alcohol. I thought I was somehow, other people could cope with life and I could not. Since I stopped drinking, I still, you know, have, you know, an anxiety, I guess, diagnosis. Like, I struggle with anxiety, but I would say about 60% of that got better in the first 6 weeks. Like, it, my inability, this crisis of confidence that I was having that nobody on the outside saw, went away. And then, you know, I got to deal with, for the very first time in my adult life, my mental health from a clean slate, not being influenced by the ups and downs and depressants and spiking your cortisol. So after about 4 months, I went back to my doctor, I went to a therapist, and I got on finally the right medications, not coupled with a bottle of wine, you know? Yeah. And that is incredible to me. And just having that reduction in stress, the increased confidence, actually liking myself, actually not feeling like my nervous system shot to hell constantly, made me a much more optimistic, happier, calmer person. everything else that shifted, I don't think would have happened if I was drinking. So I was a director at a Fortune 500 company, but felt this huge stress, imposter syndrome, golden handcuffs, whatever, first world problems. But that was, I was like, I have to stay here. I have a mortgage. I have two kids. I have this lifestyle. I'm the primary breadwinner, what you name it, right? And yet it wasn't the right fit for me. And once I stopped drinking, a year later, I had the exact same job, exact same marriage, exact same kids, same life, and somehow managed to go back to coaching school on nights and weekends, start my business while holding down this job and do it with ease. Like, who knew? You know, like it just blows my mind the amount of confidence and time and brain space and energy and, you know, how capable you are when you remove this huge thing absorbing so much of your life. And so, you know, I was sober maybe 2 or 3 years before I went back to coaching school. I was sober 4 years before I went full time into coaching. And in the last 4 years, I, you know, run a coaching business, started a podcast, you know, do all the work, created a course, work with women in membership, all that stuff. But everything else in my life is the same, right? Still married to the same great guy, still the same kids, still in the same house, still the same friends. I added many more new friends that are alcohol free, but my friends who were my big drinking buddies are still my friends, you know?
Yeah. Oh my God. I love that. It's crazy how much sobriety really can transform things. And like, especially considering, you know, for me, I thought, oh my God, if I stop drinking, life would be so depressing. Life would be so dull. Alcohol is the thing I look forward to. It's like the happiest thing in my life. Meanwhile, it was the thing making me miserable. And it's like, when you remove that and then actually, like, you know, do the work and put like your energy into living a good life, the changes that can happen. And like, what a great testament to that.
My favorite is doing that like split screen of like what would have happened if you were drinking and what happened when you were not drinking. And even just small stuff, like I go on this annual camping trip with all of my couple friends, now they're kids. We've been doing it for 20 years. When I was drinking, we would be playing guitar and singing and stuff. At some point I would black out. I would wake up brutally hungover. I wouldn't remember half the night. Now, when I wasn't drinking in early sobriety, parts of it were definitely uncomfortable, right? Everybody breaks out the boxes of wine. I really am jealous. I want to drink. I want to do XYZ. And then after dinner, we play a little guitar and then I go to bed. But I remember actually way more of the night. Like, you think you miss things. I missed way more when I was drinking.
Yes.
Waking up, not feeling ill, not trying to piece the night together, not wondering what I said or did, knowing my kids are snuggled up close and safe to me. I mean, that's pretty epic.
Oh my God, I love it. Yeah, the split screen, like the comparison. I've always said that it's so funny that when we think we're going to miss out when we're drinking, when I look at it, I'm like, I can point out so many things I missed out on when I was drinking, either because I don't remember them or like things I missed out on because I was too hungover or things I didn't do because I wanted to drink instead. Like, that's actually where the missing out happens. Like, we're not missing anything when we get sober.
Yeah. I was like the queen of like going to bed early, aka passing out. So like, I'd spend months so excited that my girlfriend is coming for like a sleepover with her spouse with the two little kids, you know, and they would come and I would like pass out when I was putting the kids to bed. So she, her husband, and my husband had apparently a great night hanging out together. I was nowhere to be found. And I wake up the next morning feeling like garbage and she's already gone for like a 5 mile run and is back making breakfast. And I'm like, okay, that's actually missing out on things, you know?
Mm-hmm. Oh, I can feel that for you. I used to drunkenly pass out. And I wonder, because we both drank wine, like wine was my drink, but it made me sleepy. And my family called it my wine eyes. I could not keep my eyes open. Oh, yeah. They'd be half shut. I know. The photos are brutal.
And now we're like, oh, we're so tired. We go to bed early. And I'm like, I probably go to bed at the same time.
Honestly. This time we're just consciously deciding to go to bed.
Consciously like tucking into bed and like putting on the sleep meditation.
Exactly. Oh my gosh, I love it. Okay. So if someone's listening to this and they're like considering getting sober or they're struggling with their drinking or they're in like the early days of their sobriety, what would you say to that person?
I would say don't think about forever. Just think about a longer goal and then moving the milestone. So I'm not a big fan of one day at a time because I feel like that plants the seed in your head that maybe tomorrow or that maybe this weekend. You need to set a longer goal and be accountable to it. But I feel like if you say forever, and trust me, I'm a sober coach. I don't want you to go back to drinking. But if you say forever or never again, that just sets out this huge debate in your head of like, really? Do I have to do that? Am I being too extreme? Do I really have a problem? I'm not an alcoholic. I'm just like, 100 days, do it as a health and wellness experiment. Like, you know what your life looks like when you're drinking. So you know what your spring looks like. You know what April, May, and June looks like when you're drinking. You've done that for 15 years. Don't you want to see how that could feel if you were fully present, sleeping well, had time for hobbies, were able to remember your nights, were able to do new things? So just give yourself the gift of a longer period of time without alcohol and see if you like it better.
Oh, that's so good. That is so valuable because it's just like it's giving yourself a chance. No pressure on yourself of like, I can never do it again. I think the same thing happens. The idea of forever really can mess people up because we can't fathom it. We can't wrap our heads around forever, but like having a more tangible goal.
It's unnecessary. You know what I think it's like? It's like going on your third date with someone and you really like them. And then someone says, all right, you have to decide right now. Do you never see this person again or do you marry them? And you're like, dude, I don't know. I like him, but I've only been like, that's what's you're a week into sobriety and you're like, I'm never, ever going to drink again. Like, get to 100 days, go on vacation with it, see how it feels, you know?
I'm curious, do you say forever now that you're 8 years? Is that like something you think?
I have no plans to ever drink again. Like, in my mind, like, I've quit drinking. I'm done.
Yeah.
At the same time, I don't spend any time dwelling on what will happen 35 years from now. And I'm going to be sitting somewhere and not drinking. Mm-hmm. You know, in my mind, like the goal is not just to go through life not drinking. The goal is to do all the things that you've ever wanted to do that drinking kept you stuck so you could never achieve them. So it's almost like not drinking is the tool that enables you to live a full and happy life. It's not the goal. But I know, trust me, if I drank, I would be sucked back into that hole really quick. And it is incredibly hard to get out of. So I see, you know, people ask me, they're like, do you ever want a glass of wine? I'm like, sure. I sit down at a restaurant and I see these women having a glass of wine. And sometimes I'm like, yeah, I used to love that. But it is just not worth it to me because I know where it takes me.
Yes. Yeah. So good. I know it's not about kidding ourselves that was something that we enjoyed, but it's knowing it's not worth the trade-off and that all the good that comes from sobriety outweighs it so much.
Yeah. You know what my husband said to me? I had him on my show.
Yeah.
And I'd never really explained all the crap that went with it. And so I was like, yeah, it was my favorite thing. But then I'd wake up at 3 a.m. and say, what the hell is wrong with me? And get your shit together. And what's wrong with you? And I'd feel sick and I'd feel ill. And he was like, tell her what she's won. He was like, that's your favorite thing. And that's what you get for it. You know, I was like,
right?
Yeah, it doesn't make a lot of sense.
It makes when you're in it, you can't see any other way. Like, I remember just thinking, like, I love drinking and this is my, I just have to deal with this because I can't imagine the alternative of not drinking. Like, I know.
It hijacks your brain. Like, it's addictive, right? It's not a rational cost-benefit analysis. You just, you know, I always say, like, you don't wait until you want to stop drinking because it'll never happen because it hijacks your brain so much that you actually have to get away from it until you look back and say, I don't want to live that way again. And I'm happier without it, you know? happier, sober, happier.
Yeah, happier. Exactly. Oh my gosh, this was so good, Casey. Thank you so much for coming on. Can you tell everyone where they can find you and follow you and anything you have going on that you want to promote?
Absolutely. My podcast is the Hello Someday podcast for sober curious women. You are coming on soon. We have you on talking about all the things we're happier about now that we're sober. My website is Hello Someday Coaching, and I have a totally free guide to your first month alcohol free there. If you want to grab it, that's awesome. And yeah.
Awesome. Thank you so much. This was so fun.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening this week. Be sure to give Casey a follow. I linked everything she mentioned in the description of this episode. If you enjoyed this episode, then be sure to share it with a friend or share it on social media. Rate, review, subscribe. Follow me on Instagram at happiestsober and subscribe to my weekly newsletter at happiestsober.com. New episodes come out every Tuesday, so I'll chat with you next week. I hope you have an amazing week. Remember that life's happiest when you're sober. Bye.
Oh, hey, it's Erin.
And I'm Michaela, and we're the hosts of the Two Sober Girls podcast, and we are on a mission to spill the wild truth about sobriety.
Forget the rosé all day cliche. Sobriety is flipping amazing.
Absolutely. It's not just about quitting the drink. It's a gift you give yourself and your loved ones.
So what are you waiting for? Break up with that old toxic relationship with alcohol and let us show you the possibilities.
And here's the thing. Everything your precious heart desires becomes way easier without the influence of alcohol.
We're not just two sober girls. We're also wellness coaches. We're here to show you how to optimize health, lifestyle, and beauty, feel sexy and alive as F.
So stay tuned because we're rolling out new episodes every Monday wherever you get your podcasts. And trust us, they have your name written all over them. We can't wait to share the magic of sobriety and wellness with you. Subscribe to Two Sober Girls podcast today and come follow us on Instagram for behind the scenes action and send us a DM. We can't wait to meet you.